Let's hope that it's not going to have these cracking sounds again in the microphone. Sorry about the... I gave some hints in assignment 5, the first part, yesterday, after I had a meeting with the reference group on Friday. We agreed that it might be a good idea that you would know how many items to return, and I was just taking my notes and put them out, and unfortunately there were errors, so I hope we didn't spend too much time on misaligned data. I had to fix 3 of the hints, but now they should be tested, and now they should be okay. This leads me to a comment I don't know if I said to all of you, but at least I had a couple of questions about, for the exam, if there are errors in the schema or in the PHP code, how important it is. And to me, that's not very... These kind of problems that are kind of typo problems, syntax problems, are not important, because this is not a PHP course. This is not a course on XML syntax. XML schema syntax. This is about understanding the concepts, understanding the structures. So I would have given myself full score for the problem, or even with the typos I had in my own queries, because it's about the understanding how you link data and how you find attributes, how you invert, meaning use not. So it's about that. So if you have a bit of typos here and there, that's not important. Doesn't mean that you should try to be sloppy. But in real life, we have compilers, we have the tools, and in an exam, you don't. So I'm going to be much more forgiving. But sorry anyway, if you spent a lot of time, I'm sorry, what's my fault? Now the hints should be okay, and I hope that with the hints you can feel a bit more, now that the hints are correct, you can feel a bit more, what should I say, thinking that at least it looks correct, since you have the right number of hints, it's a good hint that you are on the right way. There won't be lectures tomorrow or on Thursday or Friday. There should be lectures tomorrow, isn't there? Tomorrow is the first. So tomorrow there is an open day. So it's closed, nothing tomorrow and nothing on Friday. But the lab's on Thursday, as always. Which means that there are two parts of the where I intended to plan to do lectures that there are no lectures. I will make some very short videos, but mostly there are tutorials. I link them up, so if you go to the course material and look at the course material, you find material about JSON and MongoDB and XSLT. For XSLT, the idea is for you to understand another tool for transforming XML data. We have been using DOM and write a program that will read XML data and generate possibly other types of data. And XSLT can be used for the same thing. It's an XML technology that can transfer one XML document into another document. It doesn't have to be XML, but it can be. It can be XML, it can be plain text or HTML. You can define that. Don't spend too much time on the details, but get a feeling for what that technology can do. And running through a tutorial, I think you should be able to do that. And of course, you may choose to spend the time on the XML schema. Hopefully, get through everything today, and then work on assignment 4 to see that you can actually do the DOM part, DOM interaction. The hint that I put out on DOM, I think some of you were in my last week when I introduced the assignment as well. It does make sense to go from XML to in-memory representation and back or store it to the database. So you have one class that would read and parse XML data and generate a class structure with clubs and skiers independently from the XML structure. So that you put these two together, you design a class for clubs and a class for skiers, and you go from XML into in-memory, and in-memory to database. The good thing of doing it this way is, for testing, it's much easier to test that this works without having to worry about the database. And it's easy to test that storing a database works without having to worry about XML. And also your code is easier to develop, easier to maintain, when you separate, so you don't have lots of database operations in the middle of XML operations. it's a hint. You don't have to do it this way, but if you do it this way, you develop code that's easier to maintain and easier to test. I didn't require any testing at this in this assignment, so you don't have to do it, but just think about that way of designing. So you have, if you use the model view controller, you can say these are model classes that will do read XML, that will represent this in memory and write the database, and then these two would be controller classes that would, or a controller class that would actually call on reading and call on writing. That would be in control of making sure that the XML document is read and that the data is written to the database. But actually write and read, if you go back to the assignment one, you could see how the database model object worked in interacting with the database. And the controller was just asking the database model to store data. And there's no view. You don't have to worry about the view here. But these are just hints, so you could choose to design it the way you want. It's just that it's a bit harder, a bit messier. And if you were to develop this as real code, it would be much harder to test, write test code, because then you can only test the whole chain. You couldn't test the code that parses this independently from the code that prints this out. So it would be harder to write tests. Okay, this is where we were. We remember that when we deal with XML schema, we define types, what type elements have and what types attributes have. And we have complex types, which are types that could be a sequence of other elements, or it could be elements with attributes. They are complex. We have simple types, which are just strings and dates and numbers, booleans, whatever. These are simple types. We remember that we had the XML schema. We defined an element to be of some type. Sorry, we need a name. Name of the element. And we would say that it's a, for instance, a complex type, which may be a sequence, which may be of element, and with a certain name. Now, when we list an element like this, by default, it will have to appear in the document only once, but it has to appear once, unless we say differently. So this is where mean occurs equals zero, then we will say it's an optional object. It doesn't have to be there, it can be there. And if we do max occurs, we could say unbounded, which means that there is no limit to how many times it can appear. It can be zero or many. As we said, in this case, name food is unbounded, which means that it can be repeated. But since it doesn't have a mean occurs, default is one, so it has to be at least one food element, but it could be more of them. And then we need to say the type either by referring to a type that we had defined somewhere else in the document, or by saying here you have... Oops, sorry, there should be an XS before this element. XS, again, complex or simple type. So this might be, for instance, a simple type. And then we specify what the type is like. This is similar to what we had in the DTD. So in DTD, we could use the question mark to say that the child may not be there, but it can be once. We can do a plus to say it has to be once, or it could be many, or we could do star, which would be zero or many. But what we could do in schema, in addition, is that we could say that it can be zero, one, or two at the max. So we could use any number. It doesn't have to be unbounded, it doesn't have to be 0 or 1, it could be any number. So we can say an element should appear between 3 and 7 times. We can specify min and max occurs that way. Mixed content, what does that mean? We talked about the kind of structured documents versus narrative documents, and data-centric versus narrative documents, and the narrative documents were kind of flowing text. And in flowing text, you have text mixed up with elements. It's not like an element either contains text or other elements. In this case, it's a mix of elements and content. So what we do here is to say that it's mixed, which means that in the element lyrics, you might see text mixed up with zero or many break elements. Remember from HTML, the break element is where you have the end of the line. And this you do here, you say, okay, the content of the lyrics would be zero or many breaks with text in between. That's what it means, mixed. So, if we were to do this one, track. So if you were to specify track, so element name is track. What is the content of track? That's what's up in this list here. It's a sequence. Okay, so we have a complex type. Because it's a sequence, it will have to be a complex type. It's a sequence, and what does a sequence consist of? It consists of title. How many times? It has to be one and only one. So we are okay with just this. And what is the type? Type is PC data. So then we just say type equals, and in schema we have string defined. What more in the sequence? We have XS element. Name equals written by. Type is also string. So it's just a simple type. Now, how many times can it appear? Plus means that max occurs is unbounded. Doesn't have an upper bound. Max occurs equals unbounded. And then that's the end of sequence. That's the end of complex type. And that's the end of the element. So you see, we define the element. It's a complex type because it contains sub-elements, and we specify each of the elements, and min occurs or max occurs if there is anything that's not a child that can appear once and only once. Yeah, so this is pretty much, attributes. So if we have attributes defined, we also need to specify the attributes. And so when we define the type of element, the attribute is part of the type. Think about what is a type? Think about a class. So in a class, you have class members, and the attributes are defined within the class. You need to specify the attributes. These are complex classes, if you think about this. These are object references inside the class. So this complex, this sequence here would be the classes that are in the larger class, and these are just the attributes, these are just simple values, the attributes. So this is what you do, you just say attribute, and the name and the type of the attribute. It has to appear after you specify the sequence. So when you define a type, first the sequence of elements, and then any attributes. If you have no children, or if the element doesn't have any children, then you can, within the complex type, there is no sequence, so we just add the attributes. And if you remember from last week, we talked about the difference between simple content, simple type, and complex content, complex type. You remember that there was one difference between type and content, and that was when we have elements with only text content, they have simple content, but if they have attributes, they have complex types, even if they're simple content. And this is an example. So in this case, we have an attribute named serving. It's complex because it doesn't have, it has just text content, but it does have an attribute. So what we need to do is say, okay, this is simple content, and the basis for the content is a float value, and what is the extension is that it has an attribute. We follow that? So we define the type serving to be complex because it has a float, but it also has the units, which might be milligrams or grams or tablespoons or whatever. So which is a serving size. So what we say then is that this complex type is an extension to a float, which is simple content. But the extension is that it has an attribute. Lots of kind of syntax to deal with here, with all the complex types, simple content, extension, attribute. But if you think about it, what we do is that we do use certain classes, certain predefined types of content, and add an attribute, add some elements, we create extensions, we create new types based on existing types. This is called extension. What we're going to do a little bit later is to look at restriction, where we have a type, but we derive new types by restricting what possible values we accept. In this case, we extend the base type float by adding an attribute to the float value. Attributes, as in DTD, they are optional. So if you don't specify, it means that it may be there, may not be there. So if you want it to be present all the time, if you remember from the DTD, we did in the at list, we listed all the attributes for an element, we would say required or implied. Implied is optional, required means that required. Here, we just have to remember that we specify the use of it, and by specifying use required, we say that it is the same as it was required in the at-list DTD. And then we could define default values by just saying default, or we could say a fixed value, and then say what is the value, and it always have to be that that one. If you specify, it will have to be EN. If you don't specify, it will still be EN. Similar to what we had for constants and fixed ones in DTD. But these are not the most important one. The most important one is required. We have to remember that if we want an attribute to be required, we have to specify. For elements, they will always be required unless we say mean occurs is zero. Okay, so if we were now to add an attribute to title, which is the language, should be implied. Where do we need to add that? It's part of the complex type specification. And it should appear after a sequence. So here we say XS attribute, specified attribute, name equals language, type equals, we can do the most general, XS string, but in this case we also want to use language codes, or we can specify it ourselves, so we could use some other type where we just accept language codes, like EN for English. And what is the use here? Since it's applied, we don't have to say. It's optional, so we just don't have to say. And then this is the complex type. Ends here. And then the element specification. Element and star. That was the first, and I have a new, some additional slides for today. I was thinking that this is where we should be starting today, but we spent a little bit too much last week, because we're looking at deriving types. The whole idea with the schema is to not have to write as much testing in our own program. So to test that the value we have is a reasonable value. So if we know, for instance, that a value should be between 0 and 100 because it's a percentage, we would like to say, okay, only values between 0 and 100 is accepted. Because if you use non-negative integers, you remember non-negative integer will be from 0 and all the way up. We would have 200 and 500 and 1000, and we don't want those values, which means that when we open an XML document and expect a percentage, we will have to check, is it 100 or less? But we can leave that checking to the schema by defining new types and a type that would have a range of values, for instance. Enumerations is similar. Rather than accepting any strings, we will want to accept language codes, predefined list of language codes, not any string. And that's what we want to do with the restrictions. And if you remember from DTD, we had the possibility to say that attributes could be ID or ID refs. And IDs would be unique within a document, and ID refs would refer to an ID attribute inside the document. And with the schema, we can use keys and key references for that purpose. Like what is it, like primary and foreign keys. But let's look at the type restrictions first. So as I was saying, maybe sometimes we would like to limit the actual value to something between 0 and 100. Or let's say we would like to have how tall people will be. And no one is about 3 meters. So it will be a float, max 3 meters. So we don't have to check to see that someone added as a zero. So they send 10 meters rather than 1 meter. So there are possibilities to restrict the value. We may say that we have a restriction to how many characters there could be in a string. Let's say in this case we would like to have product names, and product names should be at least 5 characters and no more than 25 characters. This is like when Dipti discussed the domains in database modeling. How large strings do you need to set for titles, for names? Because in varchar you have to say what's the longest string you have. So same thing here, we are depending on the domain, users to tell us what is reasonable. But if there is a requirement saying that no names should be longer than 25, then at least the XML schema allows us to set that kind of restriction. Norwegian cars used to be 2 characters by 5 digits. Not anymore. So now it's more difficult, which also brings us to the challenge of when you write schemas and specify these constraints, they may not be forever. The politicians may decide, hey, free naming. You can use any name you want for your car license plate. And then say, oh, shit, all my XML schemas are invalidated. So then you need to go back and rewrite a new version of the schema and have it to work with new versions of the schema. Which means that a good idea when you design a schema is always include a version number. So that you can check in your code that's reading a schema to see if this is the latest version of the schema. So version numbers are quite good when we deal with these things, because things change, and XML schemas, like databases, they tend to live for a long time, and into new times where requirements change. We talk about facets. So for a type, we have various facets, meaning attributes, if you want, of a type, characteristics of a type. And we're going to look at some of the facets, but there are more, but we'll just look at some of them so that you get the flavor and understanding for what we mean by the facet. So one of the facets is the value range facet. So we can restrict in the schema, we can say that legal values or valid values would be in this range. And we have mean inclusive or max inclusive or mean or max exclusive. Of course, inclusive and exclusive will be whether you have larger than or larger than equals, less than and equals. So inclusive mean that you have including the equal. So if you want to say that a percentage type, so here we define a type that we can use anywhere in our schema. We define a type which would allow us to express percentages between 0 and 100. It's a restriction. It's a restriction of float because we accept any float that are within the range mean inclusive 0 and max inclusive 100, which means that we accept 0 and then we accept 100. If we want the percentage to be larger than 0, less than 100, then we would use exclusive, min and max exclusive. We can also restrict the length of a string. Oops, sorry, I went the wrong way. Sorry. This should be min length and max length. I have copied the wrong one from last time. Okay, I'm going to make a new one. It's not inclusive, it's min length and max length. So a string can extend an existing string by saying, or restricting existing string by saying like it has to be 5 or 25 characters at the most. So we restrict on the length of a string. Enumerations would be like here, rather than listing all the languages, we would like to list language codes. And there is an ISO standard for language codes. So we could list that standard list of values as an enumeration. And how do we specify enumerations in XML schema? By saying that this restriction contains enumerated values. So if you remember units, we can have metric units that are milligram, gram, and kilogram. And if you define any attribute or any element to be of type weight metric unit type, it will only accept these values. These are the only acceptable ones because these are the ones that are enumerated, and it's a restriction on the string base. So the only values that will be accepted will be milligram, gram, and kilogram. You may want to add ton and some other as well, but it basically this is the enumeration is what we define. So here, if I wanted to use rather than string, I could use language code type. And then we would have to find the specification of the language code type that would list all the known language codes. And then if it wasn't one of them, the validation would fail. The most advanced one is where we can specify a pattern. Any of you been writing regular expressions? Just one, writing regular expressions. These are regular expressions with some limitations to the expressiveness, but basically they will have most of what you have seen for a regular expression. So, a regular expression may look like this. So this is for the old car registration type in Norway. So you have to have two uppercase characters first. So that's what this one says. You should find two between A and Z. You should find two characters. That's what the two is. Two of these. And then there should be something from 1 to 9 followed by 4 out of sequence 0 to 9. So we kind of compose an expression that say what are the legal or the valid characters at any point in the string that we are parsing. And with this tool, we can put a pretty narrow and well-defined patterns for what we accept. And these, if you haven't been using regular expressions before, it might be very useful, because if you're going to search text strings that aren't XML documents, you can use XPath, then it may make sense to be able to specify regular expressions. And inside a regular expression, any character we put in there would be matched by itself. So if I rather than A to C, put up the character J, the parser would only accept two J's there, because that's the exact character. Here I put a sequence of characters, and then it will pick any character in that sequence. But first of all, we can do individual characters, and we can group characters by the parentheses. The parentheses are not included, so any sequence contained in parentheses would match that sequence. You remember from DTD, we could do that as well. We had X, Y, and then X, Y, plus. You remember? So this parentheses plus was just to say that this could appear many times. The same here, we can group with parentheses. We can use the vertical bar to say it's A or B. So it could be an A or it can be a B. And if you put them next to each other, then it should be A before B. Only those two would be accepted if the pattern is like this. Then we have, as we had in the DTD, we have question mark to say that A should appear only once. We had star to say zero many, or plus to say one or many. We can be more specific, saying that it should be exactly N, or it should be more than N, or it should be between N and M. How many you can expect. And then we have the characters in the list. All characters except the hat here means except the ones in the list. We have in this sequence, in A to Z sequence, minus this inner sequence. And we can escape backslash, we can escape vertical bar, we can escape the hat. All those characters that we can use here that have a special meaning in the pattern, we can escape them by using a backslash first. And then we have some character classes. S means that this would match any space character. Blank, tab, return. The capital S would mean anything but space characters. D, the same, meaning a digit. 0, 1, 2, up to 9. Big D means anything but a number. Word is a word character, which is any character without spaces, punctuations, special characters. Any word character, typically numbers and alphabetic characters. W means anything but a word character. So by using these, we can put together pretty advanced patterns for matching. I'm not expecting you to be expert in regular expressions. So it's just a tool. So you know it, and you may need to dive into it. And if you already know regular expressions, at least you know that you can use them in an XML scheme as well to validate. So, anyone trying to guess what this pattern would match? Anyone would give it a try? Thank you. Anyone suggesting what could match this string? Well, if you can use some reasoning without knowing, there is something with the at symbol. What typically contains at symbols? Email addresses, right. So it looks like an email address. What does it mean? Well, the first says that it should start with anything but at and dot. It should start with any character except at sign and dot. And then it should be followed by something. At some point there might be a dot, and then something that doesn't have a dot, and you may have multiple of these. So you have at least one character which is not a dot, followed potentially many of those characters, and then at some point there may be a dot, followed by something that's not a dot. Until you get to the at, and then you go again. You see? So you make groups of non-dot, non-at characters, and then you have possibly dots here, and you have an at in between, which is kind of an email address. Very crude pattern for an email address. There are some more restrictions, so this is not the final one. You can find regular expressions that would validate all email addresses, and that's a much more complex pattern, I can tell you. But this would basically do the trick. Now, assume that you want a database of courses, and in old times, in our universe, or on a university, courses will have to be 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 credits. Now there are 7.5 at the master's level, so that's a bit more complex now. But if you were to do this, say the only accepted value for a credit type would be 5, 10, 15, up to 30, how would you write a restricted type to deal with that? You have any suggestions? What could we do? There are several tools, or several, or at least two approaches we could take. Any suggestions? Would be a restriction, simple type, a restriction. So access simple type, access restriction, base equals, well, it could be access non-negative number. What do we do here? We could enumerate, couldn't we? So we could do, for instance, X as enumeration, and then value equals 5, 10, 15, up to 30. We can do that. We can enumerate these values because there aren't too many. That's one approach. The other approach is we could use a pattern. Value equals 2. It could be, I would think the easiest would say, okay, it could be 5 or something. Or 30. What is this something? Well, it starts with 1 or 2 and is followed by 0 or 5. So it's either 5 or it's something starting with 1 or 2 followed by 0 or 5, or it's 30. So that's one way to define a pattern. Or you could use some other, say from 1 to 2 and 0, 5. So there are ways of doing it. So what we do is that we specify a new type which is based on non-negative integers, but we only accept the integers that have this pattern or the actual values that we listed. So that's how restriction works. We could define new types that had a much more restricted value set than the ones that we had. Before we end this lecture, talk about keys and uniqueness. So in an XML schema, we can define that there are parts of a document that needs to be unique. It doesn't have to be attribute value. Remember that in DTD, we could set in an at list. In at list, we could say that the type was ID or ID ref. And if you did specify ID or ID ref, they will be assigned unique IDs, meaning that this attribute value can only appear once in the document, and this will refer to it. But in our case, it doesn't have to be an attribute. It has to be something that we can refer to using XPath expression, both for uniqueness and for keys and key references. So if you want to say that something should be unique in the document, you remember the nutrition document? In the nutrition document, we list various types of food. We may want to say that for the same manufacturer, we only want to have one food item with a certain name. So the combination of product name and manufacturer name should be unique. We don't want to have the same type of food mentioned several times in our document. And then we can say, well, there, we require that there is something unique. And what is unique? Well, it's the XPath expression food. So there must be a child to the current node where we have defined the uniqueness that has a food element. And inside the food element, the field's name and the field manufacturer, that combination should be unique. So if we draw the document, so remember we had the nutrition and we had daily values, and then we have food, many food items, and food had manufacturer name. I think maybe name was before the manufacturer, but it doesn't matter. This is the kind of structure. And what we say now, when we do define this, when we define the nutrition element, we need to here say that something should be unique, and under unique, food and the combination of manufacturer and name should be unique. Manufacturer name within food elements should be unique. That's what we specify here. Uniqueness is maybe not so often we deal with that as when we want it to be, yeah, so this is, we need to attach it to the, when we specify nutrition, that's where we need to specify uniqueness. As when we use keys. So if you want a document in which, and you're going to be writing an XML schema for the skier logs database being part of the assignment number 6, and then you can see that users or skiers, they have an affiliation, or the skiers is for a given club, so there's a link between the skier and the club, and in the season there's a link between the skier in the season and the skier in the skiers in database. So you need, there are foreign keys there that we need to implement using key and key references. So keys work like uniqueness. You just need to say what is supposed to be the key. So in this case, there is a database of employers and employees and departments. And in the employee part, there are employers with emp number that should that defines an employee number key. So this is the key. So inside inside an employee child, there is an attribute emp number, which is the key of the employee. And then I have a reference to that key. So the head of a department, the head ref, refers to this key. So that's what it refers to. That's the location. And then this key is bound to department head attribute of the department. So we have department, we have employee. Department has a department head attribute, and employee has an emp number attribute. What we say is that this is a key, and this one is referring to the key, ref. So looks pretty much as in SQL. You define a primary key and define a foreign key. And the foreign key, you have to say which attribute, the department head, and what that is refer to. In this case, we refer to the name of the key, but the name of the key here is bound to a certain location. What's important here is that keys and key references need to be defined under a common ancestor. So if you have, let's say, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, J. If you have something here that you would like to refer over here, the XPath expression you can use is quite limited. So you have to find at least a common ancestor. So it will have to be defined when you define the B or the A. You can't define it here because the key is not a child or a descendant of this node. So they both have to be descendant of the same node. So what I prefer to do is to add all keys when you define the root node, because the root node is the top of everything. So the root node, from root you can reach everything. So keys and key references, define them as children of the node element when you specify the document element. Yep, that's it. Just much more you can learn about schema. We're not going to cover it, but there is much more.